What's up, guys? Do you remember when movies were original, popcorn tasted better, and your local theater didn't just screen sequels, reboots, and remakes of sequels? These days, it seems like Hollywood isn't just digging through the past, it feels like it's barging in and squatting in it, from ghost hunting girl gangs to CGI lions singing Circle of Life in 4K. Studios are just raiding the VHS vaults and rebooting anything with a pulse or a brand. But here's the question. Why do so many of these nostalgia-fueled remakes feel more like awkward high school reunions than they do cinematic homecomings? I'm going to try to answer that question as we pop open the blockbuster time capsule and find out what so many of these movies got wrong and what a few of them got right. Now, first off, you can't fake nostalgia, so from a baseline level, these remakes are rarely able to compete with the originals because the originals aren't just movies. They're cinematic treasures that are much more than that. They are time machines to our pasts. They're linked to childhood sleepovers, weekend VHS rentals, summer nights with friends watching action flicks like Predator or horror movies like Nightmare on Elm Street, and all of us pretending not to be traumatized in front of our friends. How about that memory of seeing E.T. for the first time? That's not just nostalgia, that's emotional concrete solidified from the memories of these movies. Take Paul Verhoeven's RoboCop from 1987, for example. It was a violent, over-the-top satire of American consumerism and police militarization. It was smart, brutal, and ultra-bizarre. Then came the 2014 remake, admittedly sleek, but also PG-13, sanitized, and utterly forgettable. It looked like RoboCop, but it just felt like a Fast and Furious spinoff that never managed a single rotation. It was more serious, way less bloody, lacking any social commentary of substance, and all it really taught us was that RoboCop without Edge is just a guy in tactical cosplay, not a faithful adaptation of a half-man, half-machine cop that gave crime 20 seconds to comply.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
How about Total Recall for another example? The 1990 original was a crazy, a campy, brain-melting ride with Arnold Schwarzenegger at full speed and practical effects that somehow tied it all together and made it work. The 2012 remake with Colin Farrell, admittedly technically competent, but emotionally flat, no Mars, no mutants, just endless grayscale and empty calorie gunfights. The original was insane and proud of it. The remake felt like it needed a nap. It tried so hard to be sleek and serious, and in doing so, erased everything that made Total Recall fun and unique. But I will be fair, because sometimes lightning does strike twice and a remake can work. I think the Fright Night redo in 2011 would certainly be one of those, in my opinion. I think it was able to give the story a slick, funny, and a genuinely creepy update thanks to some strong writing and through a terrific performance from Colin Farrell.
And your girl, she's ripe. It's on you to look out for them.
When remakes work, it's because they respect the soul of the original and they're able to bring something new to the table, like Denis Villeneuve's Dune. I mean, that's how you do a bold, smart remake that respects the past while still building something epic and new for audiences to actually be able to sink their teeth into. As you can probably tell by now, a lot of these modern remakes love their gloss and the shine of 4K resolution and rarely flawless, but more often video game level CGI in place of practical effects and on-location shoots. This results in many more digital sets and much less of a reliance on practical production design. Everything looks sharper, cleaner, and thus feels infinitely flatter. Somewhere along the way, studios confused better visuals with better movies and lost the meaning of both. These nostalgia remakes are just assembly line creations stitched together from a revolving collection of film elements that each has their own Rolodex of reusable variations. Now, admittedly, some of these remakes are beautiful to look at, but sadly, they're also completely hollow to feel. Everything's sharper, sleeker, and more expensive, but where's the soul? Where's the creativity?
You don't face your fears, you ride them.
Great Flake! Great friggin' Flake! The guy is brilliant.
Take the Lion King digital live adaptation, whatever they called it, from 2019. Was it a technical feat? Absolutely, but Simba's face during Mufasa's death looked about as emotional as a tax accountant. It looked like a BBC nature documentary instead of a vibrant, adventure-filled story of emotion and song, but nowhere is this problem more obvious than in the genre of horror, because back in the 80s, horror thrived on practical effects, latex, blood pumps, animatronics, and makeup that looked horrifying because it was real. It wasn't always pretty, but it was definitely always visceral. Fast forward to the Nightmare on Elm Street remake from 2010. Jackie Earl Haley certainly had potential as Freddy from a casting aspect, but the film buried him under layers of stiff CGI, the burn makeup looked artificial, the dream sequences were overproduced, and the kills just lacked that disturbing rawness of the original. Instead of grotesque burns that made Freddy look haunting and disturbing, we got a mostly computer-generated face that kind of looked like a video game cutscene trying to jump scare you. Even the kills lost their bite in this remake. Remember the original scene where Freddy pulls a girl across the ceiling in real time in one single practical effect shot? It's a timeless moment in the genre, but in this remake, it's just filtered CGI sludge with none of the weight, none of the dread, and it looks more like a Halloween-themed Instagram filter. This movie replaced practical effects and creepy atmosphere with digital noise, and it was instantly forgettable. It's not just Freddy, though, because all of these modern remakes often ditch practical artistry for a variety of reasons, all to the detriment of the quality of the viewing experience. Take the prequel to The Thing from 2011. It originally did use some amazing creature prosthetics, only to digitally paint over them in post-production. Why? Because the studio execs felt that practical effects looked too old school, and because apparently nothing says scary like a bunch of glossy textures and fast edits to subtly hide just a big CGI blob with no dramatic weight that looked far more terrifying without all the digital masking given to it in post. And it really is a textbook example of a remake completely losing faith in its own identity by replacing handmade nightmares with glossy pixels. The Thing didn't just abandon a legacy, it buried it under a layer of green screen and drained the source material of nearly all of its disturbing atmosphere. Horror isn't supposed to feel clean, it's supposed to feel tangible and unsettling and unnerving and handcrafted. Now let's talk action. 1984's Red Dawn. It was fantastic. It was gritty. It was paranoid. It was raw. It captured Cold War dread from the perspective of average American teens forced into a resistance. The 2012 remake swapped all that tension for empty spectacle and turned North Korea into a villain via some hasty reshoots. The result? No emotion, no suspense, just empty explosions and a Hemsworth with nothing to do and a supporting cast that were all just emotionally flatlined from the minute this movie started. The problem with these movies wasn't updating the effects or simply attempting to use name recognition to add some butts to a few more theater seats. The problem with these movies is that studios have either no interest in learning the source material or have completely forgotten why these original movies worked in the first place. Another issue is that today's remakes are often built by committee, and it's the same collection of committees at all the studios that try to always cast the widest net possible with each remake, reboot, or remakequel. So in doing so, yes, they're trying to appeal to the fans of the original, but they're not attempting to please them. Instead, they aim for every demographic, every region, every streaming algorithm, every Gen Z newcomer, China's box office, while also trying to appease the film Twitter mafia all at once, and in doing so, they actually forget who loved these original movies in the first place. The result? Just a safe, sanded down product with all the flavor of a glass of room temperature club soda. These movies spend millions of dollars to remake these 80s and 90s treasure of cinema. The irony is, the audiences that made all of these movies iconic are rarely the target anymore. Case in point, Point Break from 2015. The original had spiritual surfers, anti-capitalist themes, a weird mythic energy, and Keanu Reeves saying, "I am an FBI agent," like it was Shakespeare. The remake had extreme sports and zero soul. It tried to be for everyone, yet ended up being for no one. The result was a movie with stock characters made for people who like incredible GoPro footage. It had zero interest in character or mythos, just stunts and pretty backdrops, and really every callback to the original in this movie played like nails on a chalkboard, resulting in a remake that would have been better served not trying to tie itself to the original Point Break at all.
I believe that, like me, the people behind these robberies are extreme athletes.
How about Poltergeist from 2015? The original balanced suburban family drama with Spielbergian horror. The remake played like a haunted house attraction designed by an AI trying not to offend anybody and ultimately ended up being scary for all of about 4 seconds. Also guilty, the Death Wish remake from 2018. Charles Bronson's original was gritty, admittedly ugly, politically charged, and whether you agreed with it or not, it had a point of view. The Bruce Willis remake was just a bloodless, empty revenge fantasy that couldn't decide if it wanted to be satire, grindhouse action, or NRA commercial. It ended up being none, resulting in just an emotionally empty, by-the-numbers vigilante flick that you forgot about before you even drove home from the theater. Even worse, nowadays many remakes think that a simple lazy wink or quote or callback is enough to serve as fan service. You'll get one shot of a vintage car or an original theme tune remix and a "they're back" line drop, and the studio thinks you're supposed to cheer like you just saw your childhood dog again. Such the case with Independence Day Resurgence in 2016. It tried to cash in on 90s blockbuster nostalgia, but forgot everything that made the original a crowd pleaser. Will Smith, gone. Chemistry, MIA. What we got instead was a greatest hits reel of recycled catchphrases, Goldblum quirks, and just a bland next-gen cast standing in front of a bunch of CGI wreckage. The White House didn't blow up this time, but the plot sure did. The movie trotted out familiar alien tech and character names like Easter eggs that were supposed to be enough to carry the story, but they weren't. It wanted to be a legacy sequel, but just ended up reminding us how good the first one really was.
Welcome to Earth.
Even Jurassic World Dominion gave us the original trio back and in form and full gusto, only to strand them inside of some ridiculous dino locust subplot that felt like it belonged in a totally different movie inside of a completely different franchise. Nostalgia was the bait, but it was never the backbone. How about Terminator Dark Fate from 2019? It brought back Linda Hamilton and teased Arnold's return like it was a mic drop moment, but the biggest twist in this one was killing off John Connor fresh off surviving the events of Judgment Day in the first 5 minutes. I mean, what are we doing? That's not subverting expectations. That's erasing the emotional core of the original films simply to reboot the board. The callbacks were there, the leather jacket, the familiar one-liners, the slow-mo shotgun pump, all evenly and strategically placed, but the soul of the Terminator, the mood, the atmosphere, all of it nearly non-existent. It used legacy characters like props and plot devices, then tried to sell us on a new story that just used polished up recycled parts. But then a movie like Top Gun Maverick from 2022 will come along and prove that legacy sequels don't have to rely on nostalgia as a crutch. This was a movie that honored the legacy without being handcuffed to it. The callbacks were all there, the motorcycle, the beach volleyball, the piano sing-along, but they were all woven into a story that pushed both the characters and the world forward. Maverick wasn't just back for applause, he had something to prove, he had something to lose, and he had something that needed to be passed on. Top Gun Maverick was a movie that didn't just recycle the past. It earned its emotional moments through character growth and incredible aerial action set pieces and just a sense of purpose overall. That's not nostalgia sugar. That's storytelling with weight and a textbook example of how to do nostalgia right. Now let's talk about casting changes, like the trend of currently gender or race swapping iconic characters. Now, these changes aren't necessarily a problem. Representation in cinema isn't inherently an issue, but it quickly can become one when it's treated like a checkbox or a marketing gimmick. If you don't build a story around these changes, it can quickly feel like the corporate pandering from the studio that it actually is, rather than organic storytelling by choice. Ghostbusters from 2016, spoiler alert, wasn't bad because it starred women. A female-led reboot could have and should have been a great time. This movie struggled because the script did not support them at all. The writing from Feig and Dippold was absolutely terrible, and it felt like they were actively taking shots at the source material like it had done something wrong back in 1984 instead of crafting new dynamics and a unique tone.
That stuff went everywhere, by the way, in every crack. Very hard to wash off.
Wig, McCarthy, McKinnon, and Jones, they're all capable comedic actors in their own right, but this movie just leaned all in on awkward, elementary-level improv, weak villain writing, and noisy visuals. The character and the story just lacked depth, stakes. The issue here wasn't the cast. It was a script that didn't respect the story's original tone or give their new characters any of their own identities. Tom Cruise, Denzel Washington, Tom Hanks, and Robert De Niro could have starred in this exact movie and it would still have played miserably. Then there's Ocean's 8 from 2018. The cast was stacked: Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Rihanna, Mindy Kaling, but the movie played like a corporate reboot checklist. Cool costumes? Check. Vague connection to the Clooney Pitt movies? Check. A script with actual stakes and character arcs? Not so much. It wasn't the gender swap that failed, it was the lack of originality, edge, and purpose. But when filmmakers do care about the source material, a good story, and representation, you get something like Prey from 2022, a fresh take on the Predator franchise. It introduced a fierce Comanche heroine in a brutalist survival tale that didn't pander or over-explain. It just worked. The representation wasn't a sales pitch, it was woven into the narrative, the setting, and the conflict, and it just elevated the material beautifully. And Prey ended up being a fun, highly engaging, crowd-pleasing movie, despite a Predator that did admittedly suffer from some of the very points we've already covered earlier when talking about the current digital effects over practical landscape. But regardless, Prey shows it can be done, yet for a variety of reasons, the result is too often the opposite. Regardless, the message is, diversity isn't the issue, lazy storytelling is. You can remake the plot of a classic movie, you can even upgrade the visuals, but there's one thing that you can often rarely duplicate. That's lightning in a bottle, here in the form of the people behind the creation of these movies. The Mummy from 1999, admittedly a remake of the 1932 original, had Brendan Fraser at his swashbuckling best, it had Rachel Weisz being beautiful and brilliant, and a director in Stephen Sommers that was able to balance horror, action, and comedy like it was a theme park ride with teeth. The 2017 Mummy reboot, Tom Cruise ran, Tom Cruise yelled, Tom Cruise ran some more, but where was the fun? It felt like a flaccid setup for a franchise instead of a movie that cared about its own characters. Then there's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny from 2023, proof that sometimes even bringing back the original star isn't enough. Yes, Harrison Ford returned, fedora, whip, and all, but now in his 80s, the film had to rely on just a mix of body doubles and CGI de-aging and just nostalgia scaffolding to keep the illusion going. The action scenes tried to recapture that whip-cracking magic of the past, but when your hero is grumbling about retirement more than he's dodging booby traps, it's hard to buy into the fantasy of the adventure. And with Spielberg no longer directing and George Lucas not doing the writing, the movie certainly lost its pulpy tone that defined the original trilogy. James Mangold was able to bring some competence, but not that sense of mythic wonder or rough and tumble fun. Instead of relic hunting with charisma, we got a film that kind of felt like it was just checking in on an old friend, not going on a grand adventure. tried to sell us on Indy's final ride, but in the end, it was much less Raiders of the Lost Ark and much more Raiders of the Lost IP. Nostalgia may have gotten us to the theater, but it couldn't make us feel like kids again, and that's the problem. When the soul isn't there, even the recognizable icons start to feel like strangers and just sad relics of the past, still trying to show that it can hang at the party.
Who is this man?
I'm her godfather.
Marley related.
Get back.
The original filmmakers of these movies would often infuse their work with their own quirks and weirdness and sincerity and risk, and that's just hard to replicate in a committee-led remake, so what we end up getting is a revolving door of glossy imitations that forgot what made the originals iconic, a team of creative artists taking a chance, not chasing trends. But then you compare that to the recent Planet of the Apes reboot trilogy, which is what I consider to be a masterclass in how to honor legacy without being chained to it, and in doing so over its three films, it reinvented rather than replayed. Rather than recycling 60s camp, the filmmakers started fresh from the ground up. Rise of the Planet of the Apes in 2011 built a new origin rooted in emotion, character development, and consequences. No nostalgia goggles, just great storytelling. They didn't try to shoehorn in fan service or recreate exact scenes. Instead, they reimagined the mythology from the ground up. Andy Serkis's Caesar wasn't just a technical marvel. Caesar was a fully realized character with depth and struggles and growth across three films. This was also an example where digital, when cutting edge, can be better utilized over practical, because the heart of this series became his journey, not a reference checklist. And the best part, it didn't just work, it thrived. Each sequel deepened the world, expanded the stakes, and respected the audience's intelligence. The Ape Trilogy films weren't retreads, they were bold sci-fi epics that evolved the franchise without needing a single wink to the camera, because true legacy isn't about clinging to the past, it's about building something that lasts. One of the laziest tricks in the remake handbook, the nostalgia Easter egg. You know the type, a character says a famous line from the original, a prop shows up in the background, a slowed down version of the old theme song plays quietly under a dramatic moment you're supposed to cheer, but often it just feels hollow. Take The Matrix Resurrections from 2021. At times, it felt less like a sequel and more like a PowerPoint presentation about how cool the original Matrix was. This movie did have some interesting meta ideas, but it got lost in a self-referential loop instead of pushing the story forward. Or how about Ghostbusters Afterlife? In all honesty, not a bad film. It had strong emotional beats, but leaned heavily on callback cameos and fan service gadgets. The original was wild, adult, and bizarre, and the remake felt more like a reverent museum piece. Now, these moments aren't necessarily bad on their own, but they're not a replacement for originality. Fans don't just want to remember, they want to feel something new, and the best remakes nod to the past while on the way to doing something new, bold, and ambitious. So you may be asking yourself, why does this keep happening then? And it's actually pretty simple. The modern film industry is built to minimize risk. The industry doesn't thrive on artistic originality anymore. It survives on familiarity. In the age of mega budgets and global markets, studios would rather bet on a recognizable title than an unknown idea, even if the title doesn't even make sense anymore, because brand recognition equals lower risk. That's why so many theatrical releases are IP-based or reboots. It's just the new business model. Original stories are just harder to sell, and they require marketing from the ground up. A remake comes pre-built with name recognition, even if nobody asked for it. That's why we've seen reboot attempts for everything from Flatliners to Firestarter to Roadhouse. The problem is, these movies are often trying to turn niche or cult hits, weird, risky films that stood out because they were offbeat, into something more four quadrant. In other words, for everyone, which usually means for no one. The Last Starfighter was a charming, low-budget 80s space adventure that Hollywood's been trying to remake for years, but they can't figure out how to turn it into a cinematic universe, and maybe it's because it's not supposed to be one. Maybe trying to turn it into a tentpole franchise would miss the point entirely. How about Big Trouble in Little China? There have been rumors for years of a Dwayne Johnson-led reboot, but how do you recreate a film that worked because of its wildly odd tone, its bizarre side characters, and Kurt Russell playing a wannabe action hero who barely does anything right? I mean, Big Trouble in Little China, at its core, is everything The Rock isn't. The original was pure cult magic, and any remake would have to tone it down, clean it up, or explain the joke, and in doing so, they would just ruin it. These movies weren't built to be franchises. They were lightning in a bottle cult hits, and trying to update them into big tentpole events just often flattens what made them charming in the first place. Studios keep repackaging these cult hits for global appeal, but more often the thing we loved about all these movies was their edge, their grit, and their strangeness. And let's not forget streaming, because with theaters shrinking down to a superhero or nothing model, original ideas are often getting buried on streaming platforms unless they're tied to a famous IP. Some of the most inventive stuff recently is being overlooked because it doesn't come preloaded with brand awareness or a recognizable name, and really, movies aren't supposed to be just content, or at least they shouldn't be, but that's a topic for another day. So what have we learned in all this? If you're still here, audiences don't inherently hate remakes because they're new. What we dislike about them is that they're safe, shallow, and often more interested in branding than storytelling. A successful remake isn't about slapping a new cast on an old poster. It's about recapturing that feeling, that wonder, that grit, the danger, the heart that all these originals brought us. Remakes will always fail when they try to play it safe and aim for everybody and treat all of us like we just want some pretty graphics or some member berries, but they will succeed when they take great risks and when they tell interesting stories, when they actually are able to understand why we love the originals and have the guts to evolve it and not just echo it, is when they can turn into a success. We're not necessarily mad that studios keep remaking the movies we love. We're mad that they keep doing it with zero heart and no soul. Give us a new, fresh take, not just a new cast. We're not asking for perfect nostalgia clones here. We're just asking for movies that take some risks and tell some fun stories and respect why the originals worked in the first place. So, to all the studios out there, before rebooting another classic, just pause, reboot your imagination, and then give it a genuine shot.
And I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
Flag of war. You gotta become war.
I suppose we have to register you as a lethal weapon.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?